Hari Tabo say good morning. Good morning. First of all, we want to thank the Goldstein family for sponsoring today's breakfast for the Daf Yomi attendees in honor of Howard's 60th birthday. Mazel tov. Howard, on behalf of the entire Shir, we wish you a happy birthday. And Kadosh Baruch Hu should give you continued jizun, continued health and nachas until 120. Mazel tov. All right, Tabo said, let's begin. So we are, of course. We are beginning. Today's daf is Tzadik Ches. We are picking up from the Mishnah Tzadik Zayin Amud Beis. That's where we left off yesterday. And we have a beautiful daf of Gemara ahead of us today. So Gemara says the following. Mishnah says the following. Hamocha yayin lechaveiro. If somebody sells wine to his friend, the hichmitz, and the wine ultimately goes sour, the wine turns to vinegar, Eino chayev ba'achar yuso. The seller is not chayev for achrayis. The seller doesn't have an achrayis. The seller doesn't have responsibility over the turned wine. We already discussed this case in greater depth yesterday as well as the day before. But lamaisa, we'll see that the Gemara will qualify the circumstances here. But on the most basic level, I sell wine to my friend. The wine turns. The wine becomes vinegar. I don't have achrayis. V'im yadua sheyeno machmitz. Rebbe says, if I know that my wine has a propensity to turn, meaning I know the quality of my wine is such that it very often turns to vinegar, then hareze mekachtos. Then ultimately, again, this becomes a mekachtos, which we'll define loosely as a fraudulent sale or a mistaken sale. And I will say the halacha of mekachtos is ultimately the sale is voided, money is returned to the purchaser. Vim amrlo. But if I, the seller, said to the purchaser, Yayin mevusam, top of tzadik ches, yayin mevusam ani mocher lecha, I am selling you, Rabbi Sayyid. Now we'll define mevusam as fragrant wine. Right? I'm selling you fragrant wine, which is high quality wine. Then the halacha is chayiv lahamid lo ad ha'atzeres. I have to make sure that the wine is able to last ultimately until Shavuos. There was saying, why is Shavuos considered to be the cutoff? If you take a look at the Rashbam says, Ad ha'atzeres, aval lo min ha'atzeres ve'ilech. I'm not obligated to guarantee the quality of the wine from Shavuos and on. Why? He says, Shechom tekufas tamuz mekalkil afilu yayin mevusam. Because Rabbi said the idea ultimately is that what? After Tammuz, remember again, is summertime. Once summertime comes because of the heat has an ongoing impact on the wine. So therefore, Therefore, I can't go ahead and guarantee the quality of the wine from Tammuz and on. So Rabbi said, what happens if I say the Yashan? What happens if I say I'm selling you old wine, aged wine? So Rabbi said the definition of aged wine is Mishel Ishtakid, wine that came from last year. So meaning the minimum definition of aged wine is wine that is at least a year old. Umiyushan, if I sell you exceptionally aged wine, the definition of exceptionally aged wine, Rabbi Sayyid, is Mishel Gimel Shamin, 3 years old. 3 years old. Okay, so says the Gemara the following. Rabbi Sayyid, the Gemara now is going to focus on the first case, which is if I go ahead and I sell Ruvain wine, and the wine turns to vinegar, so the Mishnah paskind that I don't have achrayis. Right? I don't have responsibility for the fact that the wine turned to vinegar. So obviously we have to define the scope of this particular halacha. So Amar Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, lo shanu ela bekankanim delokeach. That is only true, Rabbi Yossi, when the purchaser transferred the wine into his own utensils. So if the purchaser transferred it into his own utensils, then lamais again, the purchaser bears the responsibility if the wine turns. Aval bekankanim democher. But if at the end of the day, the wine remained in the jugs, in the receptacles of the seller, Amrlei, the purchaser could say, Ha chamrach v'ha kankanach. This is your wine, and this is your receptacle. So we'll say, so what now you have Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina, ultimately saying is the following. When the Mishnah says that if I sell Ruvain wine, and that wine turns to vinegar, that I'm not chayiv in achrayis, that I, the seller, don't have responsibility, that's when the purchaser transferred the wine into his own utensils. Because I could say, look, once you transferred it into your own utensils, I'm done. I'm finished. But, says Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, if the purchaser purchased the wine, and that wine remained in that wine remained in the same utensils that he purchased in that he purchased them from me. And again, nothing essentially has changed. Then the purchaser has right to sell to me, the say to me, the seller, obviously there's something wrong with your wine that your wine turned so quickly. So the Gemara says, one second. I don't understand. Even if for argument's sake, Reuven kept the wine. Reuven is the purchaser, I'm the seller. Reuven kept the wine in the same jugs, in the same barrels that he bought them from me from. Then Havi, so the Gemara says, my Havi lei, leima lei, lo iboi lecha l'shehuye. Why can't I counter back to Reuven? Reuven, why did you keep the wine so long for me? Meaning, I sold you wine, you should drink it immediately. The fact that you did not drink it immediately and you kept it around, you bear responsibility for it. And we're going to say, what the Gemara is saying over here is the following, that Lemaisa, are we entertaining the possibility that if I sell wine to Reuven and he keeps it in the jugs that I sold him, that I have ongoing responsibility on that wine forever? In other words, at a certain point in time, what we should say is what? You bought the wine, you bought it to consume it, you didn't consume it quickly enough, it turned, that's not my problem. To which the Gemara Salot Tzicha will say, going back a little bit to what we've learned earlier, Da'amrali Lemikva. Both say the keys over here is where what? Where Reuven said to me, he said to me that why is he purchasing this wine? He's purchasing it for cooking purposes. So if he purchased it for cooking purposes, Rabbi said, then what? Remember, we drew this distinction a few days ago. That wine that's bought for cooking purposes is used sparingly, is used slower. So therefore, if I know that Reuven is purchasing the wine for cooking purposes, I have an obligation to provide him with wine that has the ability to last. So we'll say, so the way now we're setting this up is the following. The way we're setting this up over here is that when do we say that if I sell wine to Reuven and it turns that I don't have achrayisa like the Mishnah Paskins, that's if what? If Reuven transferred it into his own barrels. See, if Reuven bought it from me, the moment you the moment you take it out of the packaging, the moment you take it out of the seller's barrels, then what? Full responsibility for the wine transfers over to who? To the purchaser. But if Reuven says, but if Reuven keeps the wine in the barrels in which he bought them from me, from meaning the barrels that I sold them to him, coupled with the fact that what? Let's say he told me that he's purchasing it for what purpose? Cooking purposes. Then I bear protracted responsibility over that wine, because since you articulated to me that he's purchasing it for cooking purposes, I know that I have to sell him the type of wine that has the ability to last. I'm going to say, all of this is obviously leaving aside other extenuating circumstances that could cause wine to turn. So I remember the Rashi already pointed this out. Summertime, right, was a dangerous time to keep wine if you did not have optimal conditions, because the heat could turn the wine. But leaving all that aside, this is the halacha Rabbi Yosef ben Chanina says. So when it goes weiter. Umay duchke Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina, lo ukma lemas nisin ben kankanan delokeach. What is it in the Mishnah that caused Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Chanina to have to set up the ratio, the beginning of the Mishnah, as a case of where the purchaser purchased the wine and transferred the wine into his own barrels? Uda amar lei lemikva, and talking about a case where ultimately the purchaser told the seller that he's buying the wine for cooking purposes. Lukma, why not establish the Mishnah bekankanin democher with the fact that the wine remained in the barrels of the seller? Udelo amar lei lemikva, and again a case where the purchaser did not say that he was purchasing it for cooking purposes. Amar Rava, to which Rava responds, no, because in Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina's view, masnisin keshisei. The Mishnah posed the problem. What's the problem of the Mishnah? Diktani im yadua sheyeno machmitz hareze mekachto. So let's remember again, what was the second line of the Mishnah? The second line of the Mishnah was, if I, the seller, know that my wine turns quickly and I sell it to Reuven, that's called the mekachtos. We'll say that it's called the mistake in sale. Reuven has the ability to void that sale and get his money back. So the Gemara says, am I? But why does Reuven have the right to void the sale if I have wine that turns? Why can't I say back to Reuven, listen, if you buy wine, if I'm selling you wine, my expectation as the seller is that what? What are you going to do with the wine? You're going to drink it. Let's say, I have to understand something. Also, it's clear that Lamais, again, the common consumer of wine, was not purchasing wine to leave it in his wine cellar for years. He was purchasing it in order to go ahead and what? In order to go ahead and drink it. So I don't understand, even if I have wine that turns relatively quickly, Why should Reuven have the right to claim Mekach Tos against me? I should have the ability to say, I sold you the wine with the expectation that you are going to consume it in a relatively quick fashion. If it turned, Reuven, that's your problem. It just means you don't drink enough fast enough. And that's your problem, right? That's not, you should work on yourself. We all have to improve ourselves, right? You should work, drink faster and drink more, but that's not my problem. To which Gemara says, Allah Shana, rather, it has to be that, what's the case? Do Amrali Lemikva. Suppose that the case has to be where what? Where Reuven tells me that he's purchasing the wine for cooking purposes. So if Reuven tells you that he's purchasing the wine for cooking purposes, then I know that's what? He's going to keep this wine for a longer time, which means that if I have wine that turns relatively quickly, that becomes a Mekach Tos. So we'll say again, remember, what the Gemara is suggesting over here is the following, that the case of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says that if I sell Reuven wine, and I know that my wine turns relatively quickly, that's a Mekach Tos. That is a mistaken sale. I will say, when is that a mistaken sale? When Reuven tells me that the purpose of his purchase is for cooking. He's telling me, if he tells me I'm purchasing wine for cooking, what he's telling me is what? Is that I need this wine to last. If I know that my wine, it's good wine, but it does not last, then I will say that is a mekach tos. Shmamina. So he must allow shmamina. Dabalei mikvah. Shmamina. O pliga drav chiyah bar Yosef. And Rabbi Yosef, ultimately, again, this will have to say that Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Hanina will argue on Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef. So, Rabbi Yosef, so just so you understand what's happening over here, what's happening here is the fact that ultimately, again, the second case of the Mishnah is dealing with a case where the purchaser Reuven is purchasing the wine for cooking purposes. Therefore, again, the first case must also be dealing with a case where he's purchasing it for cooking purposes. So what's the case where I don't have achrayus if it turns? That'll be the case where ultimately the purchaser transfers the wine into his own barrels. In other words, once you go ahead, if I sell Reuven wine and he transfers that wine into his own barrels, then Rosie, what does the Mishnah teach me? I have no more liability. Meaning, my liability is done. If you tell me you're purchasing it for cooking purposes, then yes, I have an obligation as the seller to make sure that the product I give you lasts. But my it's interesting. It's a warranty. My warranty on the product only applies when you keep it in the barrels that I sold it to you in. But the moment that you go out and you transfer it into your own barrels, then what? My warranties, which I will say makes sense. I, as the seller, could guarantee, to whatever degree a person could guarantee anything, but could guarantee the warranty on the wine, so to speak, that my wine's not going to turn. When you keep it in my, I know my barrels. The moment you take it out of my barrels and put it into your own barrels, warranty is done, and whatever happens to the wine, I no longer have any responsibility. Opligu Rav Chiya bar Yosef. This argues on Rav Chiya bar Yosef, because you must remember again, we've seen the sheet of Rav Chiya bar Yosef. It's on Rav Chiya bar Yosef. Chamra Mazla Demare Garim. The both say, the status of your wine is based on the mazel of the owner. Shene Emar, because he quotes over here from the Pasuk, from Chabakuk, Va'af ki hayayin bogeid gever yohir. We'll say that the way the Gemara is interpreting this Pasuk is, when a man is arrogant, yohir, when a man is arrogant, even his wine rebels against him. Right? Even when a man is arrogant, so we'll say, so Rav Chiya bar Yosef is of the opinion that Rav Chiya, if your wine turns, he says that's a din ultimately, again, in the spiritual status of the Yiddish. We'll say, just so you understand where the Gemara is coming from over here. So first of all, the Marsha points this out. This is just saw this morning. The Marsha points out, you know, why is it that my wine is an indication of my spiritual status? So the Marsha points out, he says, because we know that in the Psukim, often a tzaddik is compared to wine and a rasha is compared to vinegar. So once we have that comparison already, so Rav Chiya bar Yosef says, if your wine turns, that is an indication ultimately of your spiritual status or lack thereof. Well, I just tell you as an aside, because it's very lamaisa. So you know, again, we just read the parashios of Tazria Metzora. So we'll say, you understand that again, the great gift of Tzaras was the fact that you got an immediate spiritual report card from the Ribono Shel Olam. You got immediate spiritual feedback. If you were not doing the right thing, the Ribono Shel Olam give back. You know, we'll say, just as an aside. So the Netziv brings down, I think I've mentioned this before, the Netziv brings down, he quotes, you know, that Klal Yisrael complained about the man in the desert. So the Netziv says, how could someone complain about man? Ron Shalom delivers your food every single day. It tastes like whatever you want. There's no excess. There's no weight, trans fat. You know, none of it. All is good. How could anyone complain about the month? So the Netziv quotes the Gemara that says that depending on where you were holding in life, determined where your month fell. So if you were a tzaddik, the month fell right at your doorstep. You're having a little bit of spiritual issues. It was a little bit down, you know, at the walkway. You know, again, if you are really in trouble, you mamash had to put on your shoes, right? To pack up some supplies and go out and get your mun. Sabbos says, can you imagine waking up in the morning? Can you imagine the anxiety when you wake up in the morning, right? So you're going to walk out of your tent, and you know, like, the Schwartzes are going to see you walking right out of your tent, and what's going to happen? You know, Mr. Schwartz has his mun right over there because he's doing the right thing, and I'm breaking out in a cold sweat because I know that yesterday was not a very good spiritual day. So what happens? I don't know where my mun's going to be. So what's it? The Netziv says that Klal Yisrael didn't want the mun because to live under the microscope like that of the Ribono Shel Olam, to get instantaneous divine feedback, we think of it as a gift. You know, we think it as a gift because we haven't had it for 2,000 years. But Lamaison, you have to live like that every single day under the divine microscope. It's difficult. Klal Yisrael didn't want that. They didn't want the instantaneous divine feedback. So I'll say, on one hand, it's a great gift. On the other hand, what it does is it creates a certain level of spiritual anxiety. So what's happening, according to Chiyah Bar Yosef, is as much as we don't have mun, and as much as we don't have tzaras, the Ribono Shel Olam gives us feedback in all different kinds of ways. So if Chiyah Bar Yosef says, you uncork the bottle, and it turned, that's your feedback. Again, and it will say, this is true. By the way, this is when everything. Gemara says a person stubs their toe. That's also divine feedback. Gemara says, someone brings that. Person reaches in their pocket to take out a quarter. And they take out a penny instead. That's Yisurin, the Gemara says. That's a divine affliction. That's also feedback. Every single time in life that something doesn't go right or doesn't go as planned, that's divine feedback. And we're supposed to take that to heart. So here by Yosef says, the wine turns bad, that's your tzaras. That's your mun being down the block. That's the divine feedback as well. Because again, va'af kiyayin boged gever yohir. Even the wine rebels against an arrogant man. So both say, now the Gemara talks a little bit about arrogance. Amar Rav Mari, hay man di yohir, afila in shebesi lamekabo. Both say, someone who is arrogant, even the members, even the own members of his home, do not accept him. What this means is that when someone is arrogant, even his own family members have difficulty relating to him. Shneimar gever yahir velo yinova. What does it mean? A gever yahir velo yinva. So the Gemara says, my velo yinva binova shelo. Rabosai, nova means his dwellings. So even someone who is arrogant, Rabosai, even the own members of his household, and generally when the Sigla members of his household, although it could extend to general family, very often it refers directly to one's spouse. That Lamaisa, when one is arrogant, it's not just an issue that one has problems in general interpersonal relationships, but one has problems in his own shalom bayis as well. Amr Rabbi Yehuda, Amr Rav. We'll say so a little bit of Agadah now that we started with this. Kalam is Gaya B'tal Shatam Tchachem. Vino Tam Tchachem. Both says an incredible Gemara. Whoever Kalam is Gaya, someone who is arrogant enough to don the cloak of a Tamut Chacham, but he is not a Tamut Chacham, he will not go ahead and be able to enter in to the mechitza, literally to the partition of God. The Rebbe said, now what does this mean? So the Rashbam points out over here that Talmidei Chacham and Rebbe said used to wear a longer cloak. Remember again, they were wearing robes to begin with, so they would wear a cloak. The Talmid Chacham's cloak would go almost down, all the way down to the edge of his clothing. There used to be his robe would extend the tefach beyond his cloak. This was a specific cloak of a Talmud Chacham. So the Gemara says, whoever wears the cloak of a Talmud Chacham, but is not a Talmud Chacham, is not able, after 120, to enter in to the closeness of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So we'll say, well, let's read the Ksiv Hacha. It says over here, Velo Yinve, Uksiv Hasam, El Nevei Kodshecha. Okay, so it says over here that an arrogant man, Lo Yinve, and again, what does it mean, Lo Yinve? El Nevei Kodshecha. You will not be able to enter into the closest proximity to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they're both saying, what's the pshat? What's the pshat with that? So this is an incredible lesson the Gemara is teaching us. The Ribono Shel Olam does not expect perfection from us. Why doesn't he expect perfection from us? Right? First of all, I'm not perfect. You know why we're not perfect? it's Ribbono Shel Olam's fault. It's Ribbono Shel Olam's fault. Right? The Baal Shem Tov HaKadosh says that whenever I commit an Aveira, I can always say, Ribbono Shel Olam, don't get so angry at me because you share responsibility at this also. If I mess up, you're partially responsible because you made me imperfect. You planted within me my desires, my wants, all the things that lead me astray. So listen, we can work on this, but let's both own the mistake together. Now, don't use that too often, right? But Lamaisa, save that for the really big mess ups. But Lamaisa, it's very true. Ribbono Shel Olam created me with my own. So I'll say, Ribbono Shel Olam, this is very important. So, if HaKadosh Baruch Hu does not expect perfection, then what does he expect? One simple thing. Honesty. Honesty. Don't pretend to be something you're not. Meaning, accept who I am, right? So what's happening over here? So a person goes ahead and puts on the cloak of a Talmid Chacham. Don't do that, Kadosh Baruch Hu. Kadosh Baruch Hu just wants us to be honest and genuine. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants more than anything is genuinity. I know it's not a word, but I like it. Right? Genuinity, genuine kite. Kadosh Baruch Hu wants to be genuine. This is who I am. So what does it mean a person's putting on the cloak of a Talmid Chacham? Rabbi Yossi, so many times what we do is we try to pretend to be something that we're not as a way of masking our deficiencies. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, don't do that. Because the moment you try to mask your deficiencies by putting on the cloak of the Talmid Chacham, meaning pretending to be someone that you're not supposed to say, what's the problem? People who pretend to be something that they're not never actually take on the hard work of fixing their deficiencies because they just simply pretend they don't possess the deficiencies. Kadosh Baruch Hu says, don't do that. I know who you are. You know who you are. And it's okay. It's okay. I created you deficient. It's okay. Own your deficiencies, work on your deficiencies, but if you try to mask them by pretending them that they're not there, then you never gain any real traction in life. And if you never gain any real traction in life, then guess what? Then after 120, you're not going to be able to come close to me. After 120, you're not going to be able to enter into my mechitza. Don't wear the cloak of the Talmid Chacham. Wear the cloak of whoever you are. Accept who you are. Be genuine in who you are. And find a way to make you, who you are, just a bit better. An incredible yisod. Hi, man. We'll say back to barrels of wine. First white line. Sadiches Amud Aleph. Amar Rava. Hi, man. This is actually an interesting case. I go ahead and I sell a barrel of wine to a chen v'na'ah, to a storekeeper. Now, we'll say, now the Rashbam points out the way this would work is, if I take a look at the Rashbam actually, hi man, the nizbin chavisei de chamer lechen v'na'ah, it's about 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, about 10, 11 lines down in the wide lines. Hi man, the mazman lechavisei de chamer lechen v'na'ah, moser chavish shalo lechen v'na'ah, kedei limkores hayayin bechanuso v'yishtaker, or the yistakir, I should say, not the yistakir. The yistakir, achen v'niktas, while the bais le'kama also al achshkibah. So here's the arrangement. I go ahead and I give a barrel of wine to the shopkeeper. But so the way this would work is the following. I don't know what the technical financial term is, but what I do is I give him the barrel of wine. He doesn't pay me until he sells out the barrel. Consignment. Okay. So he doesn't give it to me until he sells out the barrel. So the way this works is the following. He guarantees me, he guarantees me $500 for the barrel. And obviously what he's going to do is he's going to up the price a little bit. So he's going to he's going to be able to sell it for $750. But he locks in the price for me for $500. But I don't get paid until, again, he finishes selling off the barrel. Now, listen, now what happens over here? So adaita, so I'm on this mazman chavis lechamra lechemina, adaita lisabuye. Adaita lisabuye. So ultimately, again, he's going to pay me at the end of selling out of the barrel. V'tokif. Now what happens? Before he has a chance to sell out the barrel, what happens? V'tokif apalga o atilsa. The barrel goes bad. Part of the barrel goes bad. Half of the barrel goes bad. A third of the barrel goes bad. So what's the shaila? The shaila is who has achrayas for the spoilage. Dino hu de makabel emine. So the Gemara says, that's an easy one. The halacha is that the balabayis, the owner of the barrel, me, meaning not the shopkeeper, the owner of the barrel, I bear the full responsibility ultimately for the spoilage. Why, Rabbi Osai? Because at the end of the day, whose barrel is it really? It's my barrel. Meaning, the shopkeeper is my, like, shaliach, right? He's my agent. He's an extension of me to sell the wine, but lemaisa, the barrel is mine. So, I mean, I haven't sold him the barrel. The barrel is mine. And therefore, again, lemaisa, I bear responsibility for spoilage. But, below Amran, Elo deloshani bebarza. Rabbi will say, that's only assuming, Rabbi will say, now that's assuming essentially the Gemara is saying over here is that he was not negligent with the barrel. Was an example that he did not change the spigot. So Rabbi will say, so remember again, essentially they sold wine on tap. So in other words, what would you do is you would take the barrel, the shopkeeper would get the barrel, what would he do? He would plug in the spigot. Now Rabbi will say, spigot, is that the right word? Yeah, like a spigot. A faucet. Right? So Rabbi will say, now remember, the placement of that spigot itself was a science. You had to know where to place the spigot. Why? Because if you place it in the wrong place, wrong direction, you could have too much air. Also, you have to place it in a place where, again, the sediment, right? The sediment is not collecting. So again, when do we say that I, the balabas, have responsibility for the wine? That's only where the shopkeeper was not negligent with the placement of the spigot. But if he was negligent with the placement of the spigot, or for that matter, added an additional spigot, which is problematic as well, lo, then the mice again, I, the balabas, don't have the responsibility, rather the shopkeeper will have the responsibility. But lo, amran, elo de lo mati yom adeshuka. Oh, but here's another piece. The other piece is, this assumes that the spoilage occurred when? Before the market day. Ava mata yom adeshuka lo. But if the market day already occurred, and then the spoilage happens afterwards, then the shopkeeper has responsibility. Why, Rabbi Osai? Because I could tell him, you should have been a little bit more zoriz in your selling of the wine, and essentially divested yourself of all the inventory. Why do you still have inventory after a market day? So again, this is reflective of these arrangements. The way it should work is, you should sell out a barrel in the course of a market day. If you did not sell out a barrel in the course of the market day, that's your own negligence, and therefore you bear the responsibility for the spoilage. So what's the essential thing Mara is teaching me is the following. That Lamaisa, in general, unless there is negligence of the shopkeeper, either negligence by not being alacritous, right, zoriz enough in selling the product, or actually some type of mishandling of the barrel, then the shopkeeper has achrayis, and the absence of his own negligence, I, the balabas, have the responsibility over the barrel. Next, v'amarava, ha'iman de'kabo chamra adaita, de'memati le'le parvasa deval shafot. We'll say, listen to this. Here's the following arrangement. I am the balabas. I own the barrel. I give the barrel to Reuven. Right? Reuven is my merchant. And I tell him, I want you to go ahead and take the barrel. And I want you to sell it by the port of Val Shafot. That's the name of a place. The port of Val Shafot. Why the port of Val Shafot, Jabosai? Because this apparently, Val Shafot was a place that was known that you could charge more money for wine. Jabosai, the Rashbam points out over here, we don't have to get into it because it's not really important for our situation, but the Rashbam points out that this was a case of what we call an iska situation. But again, with that, we've seen this many times. We often know it as a heter iska. But I will say an iska situation is such whenever you have two parties involved in a business, they're partners. But one of them really is supplying the money, the other one is running the business. So I will say, how do you allow them ultimately to share in profits without it being considered as if we'll call him the capital partner, is getting interest on his money? So we'll say, so very simply what we do is, even though one party is investing in 100% of the money, we view ultimately as the capital as being split between the two partners. So one half of the money is considered to be a loan to what we'll call the managing partner, and one part that is an investment. So again, I guess it's not really important. You can give the Rashbam goes through all the mechanics of this. For our purposes, it's not so important. What is important? So again, I tell Reuven, I'm giving him specific instructions. Not just simply sell the wine, but what? But what? I want you to sell the wine at a specific location. So I want you to dafka go to Val Shafot and sell the wine there. What happens? So it's amazing. What happens? Va'adamasi hasam. By the time that Reuven gets to Val Shafot, zol. What happens? If I say the price of wine went down. The price of wine went down. So what happens? So the Gemara says, Dinahu de Mekabale. So we'll say, so who bears the loss over here? I bear the loss. Why do I bear the loss, Rabosai? Because remember, I tied Reuven's hands. In other words, meaning I gave Reuven specific instructions that he could only sell the wine in Val Shafot and not anywhere else. So because I financially tied his hands. So therefore, again, if the price of wine goes down in Val Shafot, we're going to call me the capital partner. This is the capital partner. We will call Reuven the managing partner. I, the capital partner, bear the responsibility for the loss. We'll say, what happens if the price didn't go down, but let's say the wine turned to vinegar, before Reuven got to Val Shafot. So who bears responsibility there? Amalei Rav Hillel, Rav Ashi, Ki Avon Be Rav Kahana, Amar Lan, Chala Lo. So ultimately, again, so they told us that no, if it turns to vinegar, then I do not bear the responsibility. Look at the Rashbam for just a moment. It's about five lines up. Chala Lo Kilomar, Lo Mekabo Balayayin, Kola Hefsid, Va'af Agav De Kaman Dermali Lemikfa Dami, Va'yibayla Shem Mishum De Mazul Shnei Abayim Garim. So Moshe, listen to this. So he says, when we went to the Yeshiva, Rav Kahana said that if the wine turns to vinegar, then I, Rose, the capital partner, do not bear the full loss. Rather, what? We have to share the loss equally. Why do we share the loss equally, Rabosai? Because it's both of our mazels that caused this loss. Meaning it's my mazel and it's Reuven's mazel that caused the wine to turn to vinegar before he got to Val Shafot. Udalo Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina. And Rabosai, this is not in accordance with the opinion of Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina, because Yossi Rabbi Chanina would ultimately hold that in a case like this, ultimately, again, it would be me, the Balabas, who would bear the loss. V'ika da'amri, others say, afilu chala nami mekabel. Then no, even if it turns to vinegar, I, the Balabas, the owner of the barrel, who we would call ultimately, again, the capital partner, would bear the loss. The Gemara says, kiman, Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina. In accordance with who? With Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina. So we'll say, just you should see, take a look at the last two lines of the Rashbam on this daf. The Rashbam writes, v'nira be'enai, deles hilchasa, Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. Ultimately, again, the halacha, it's fine, Bachmashal, don't worry, it's fine. That the halacha does not follow Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Chanina. Ella, Kirabhia Bar Yosef, de Mazla, de Gavra Garam. So we'll say, this is actually quite interesting. The Rashbam points out over here that the halacha follows, and we'll say, when it comes to wine, we actually say that if it turns, we assume that is the mazel of the owner that has caused the loss. It is the mazel of the owner that has caused the wine to turn to vinegar. So what Rashbam says is the following. Under normal circumstances, if I purchase wine and the wine turns, then I will say we assume that whose mazel is that? It's the mazel of the owner. Right, the purchaser. It's my mazel. We'll say, unless, of course, A, it's known that the wine of the seller normally turns, in which case it's deficiency in the product, or the maisik in Abosai, say, unless, of course, I specifically said to the seller, I am purchasing this wine for cooking purposes. So meaning in that case where I told him that the wine has to last for a longer amount of time, in that case, if the wine turns, then ultimately, again, that'll be the responsibility of the seller. And Rabbi say, that also only assumes that what? When does the seller retain responsibility? Only when? If it was kept in his barrels. Remember again, so we'll say what we have is the following. Here's what we know in terms of wine. When I purchase wine, to keep it easy, once I go ahead and I remove the wine from the barrels of the seller, then what? I have full responsibility. In other words, all warranties are off once I remove it from the barrels of the seller. So again, that's halacha number one. Number two, under normal circumstances, if I left it in the barrels of the seller, but the wine turned, and I did not indicate that I am buying this for cooking purposes, and I both say, whose responsibility is that? The purchaser, the buyer. That's my mazel. If I said, however, that I'm purchasing it for cooking, and I left it in the barrels of the seller, and it turned, under those circumstances, then it is the seller's responsibility. I have the right to give him back the wine and get back my money. Yain mishal ishtakit. So also remember again, the Mishnah told me that if I purchase aged wine, it has to be at least a year old. And if I purchase really aged wine, then it's at least 3 years old. Amud Beis, which the Gemara says, Ta'ana umiyashin v'holich adachag. Rabbi say, when we say that lemaisa, that really aged wine is 3 years old, so it has to be that it's 3 years old already, meaning 2 years prior to the one in which we are currently in, and that wine must be able to last until Sukkis. That's the idea, meaning the wine has to be able to last ultimately again through the summer months up until Sukkis. That's the definition of aged wine. Okay, says the Mishnah. So we'll say, again, now we get into a very interesting discussion. Hamocher mokom lechavero. So we'll say, the key here is the following. I sell land to my friend. Of them, I will say, I am a contractor. And I got a job for my friend to do what? To go ahead and make a wedding house for us. And they're both saying, what the Mishnah is reflecting over here is that it was common practice that if I was marrying off my son, I would build him a house. I build him a house. And I will say, now also what's important to know about this is the following. That often, there was a small wedding reception that was used in that house. In other words, say it's a great chap. Essentially, you would take the money that you would spend on making a chasana, and what would you do? What would you do? You'd build a house. You'd build a house. And the mice, again, that's where my son would live after the chasana as well. So we'll say, so the case over here is the following. Reuven wants to build a home for his son. Or for that matter, again, Obeis Amanas Labitos. So we'll say, this is not a simcha that's building. This is Nebuch, again, if Reuven's daughter was widowed, so it's often customary that a daughter would move back with her parents. But the mice, she's not going to move back into the house. They would build for her a small house next to the parents' house. So Rabbi said, again, in both of these cases, what's happening over here is the following. Either Reuven tells me he's building it, so I'm selling him land to build it on, or Reuven hires me to build this. Rabbi said, in both of these cases, what's happened over here? Reuven did not give me the dimensions of the home. So all he tells me is, right, I need you to build this house for my son or for my daughter, or I need you to sell me the amount of land necessary to build this home on it, but never gives me dimensions. So what the Mishnah that deals with is, what are the minimum dimensions for such a home? So what's that? This is going to be quite shocking. So the Mishnah says, Bona Arba Amos Al Shesh Div Rabbi Akiva. What's that? Minimum dimensions for a home, right, for my son after he gets married, for a daughter after she's widowed, are 4x6. 4 amos by 6 amos. So we'll say, right, this is not like the bathroom, right? So again, this is the living space. So we'll say, so understand, obviously, this is a minimum domicile. Now, whether this means that the assumption was that they were using certain facilities in the, meaning this was much more of like an addition. So whether this means that it was assumed that they were going to be using some of the facilities, obviously, there's no indoor plumbing, so all bathrooms are outdoors, but maybe even kitchen cooking areas, this could just be that this was a living space, but everything else was used in the primary home, whatever it is, but it's 4 amos by 6 amos. Tivi Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Shua says, what are you talking about? Refes Bakarhi. That's not a home, that's a stable. That's a stable. In other words, you would put your cow in that. You can't put people in that. Rather, Harotz, and I guess so we'll say, so we'll try to understand how to go ahead and understand that conversation. Harotz Elasos Refes Bakar. We'll say first wide line. If somebody wants to go ahead, so we'll say just to understand, just for our purposes, if you want to understand what this is, so an amma is approximately 1.5 feet. Let's call it for our purposes. So if you could imagine again, 4x6 Rabosai is essentially 6x8, right? 6x9, right? So a 6x9 domicile, which Rabosai is, I'm sorry? It's a bedroom. It's a very small bedroom. So the Gemara says the following. If again, we'll say same case, if I was hired to go ahead and construct ultimately again a stable, then what's the halacha? Bone dalet amos al sheish. You go ahead, Rabbi Osai, the minimum dimensions of that are 4 amos by 6 amos. Bias katan, if I was hired to go ahead and construct a small home, right, a tiny home, then sheish al ches, 6x8. 6x8 is the minimum. Gadol, if I was hired to go ahead and construct a large home, ches al eser, 8x10. The Rabbi said, these are minimum dimensions. Traklin, we'll define what traklin means. Yud al yud, 10x10. Rumo, the Rabbi said, now what about the height? So we've been discussing again the dimensions. What about the height? Rumo is kechatzi arka o kechatzi rachbo. The Rabbi said, if you want to know the required height is take the length plus the width and divide it by 2. That is the required height. Rai l'davar. Rabbi said, where do we get this height from? Where do we get this dimension for height? This comes from the Beis HaMikdash. Okay. To which the Gemara says, Lam li b'misne beis chasnus libno o beis amonos libito. Lisne beis chasnus libno libito o beis amonos libno libito. So we'll say the Gemara has an interesting kasha. Why does the Mishnah say that Reuven's building a beis chasnus for his son, right? A wedding house for his son, and a widow house for his daughter. Why not say a wedding house for my son or my daughter, right? Whoever the child they're marrying off. And Nebuch, right? A widow or widower house for my son or for my daughter. Why does it frame it as beis chasnus for his son and beis amonos lebito? To which the Gemara says, Milsa agav orchei kamash malon, because the Mishnah is teaching me about, say, just the side halacha, which is, Delo darka dechasna lemeder bechamua. It is not appropriate for a son-in-law to live by his in-laws. It is not appropriate for a son-in-law to live by his in-laws. Therefore, I will say, if I'm marrying off a son, ultimately, again, that son is going to live by me, by his father, and not by his in-laws. I will say, now, what's wrong with living by his in-laws? Take a look at the Rashbam. It's actually very interesting. Fourth wide line, Bechamua, Kedarmina v'psachim. As the Mishnah says in Pesachim, Heveizor b'ishtecha mechasna harishon. A man should be careful with his wife around his first son-in-law. Why? Amri la mishum chashad. Some say because, again, there's a fear of immorality. V'amri la mishum mamon. Others say it's because that a woman has a special feeling towards her first son-in-law, and she's going to spend a lot of money on him, unbeknownst to her husband. V'isalaha, v'isalaha. So we'll say this is just a concept the Gemara brings down that al tznius. It's not appropriate for a son-in-law to live in the same home as his mother-in-law, or even to live in close proximity to his mother-in-law. So it's in Mufurish Gemara that says you have to have a distance between yourself and your in-laws. Mamish, like it's not, you know, it's Mufurish Gemara. So the Gemara says the following. So therefore, because of that, the Gemara says that it would be a father who is building a home ultimately for his son who got married, as opposed to a father-in-law who would be building a home for his son and for his son-in-law and for his daughter. So the Gemara says, b'sefer ben Sira. As it says in the Sefer Mesir, so ben Sira was an individual. Again, it was considered to be a scholarly individual. Ben Sira is quoted a number of different times, an interesting person, who wasn't amongst the Rabbanim, but was considered to be a scholarly individual. It's during Bayesheni. What does ben Sira say? Hakol shakalti v'kaf maznayim. I measured everything in the weights, in the scales. V'lamatzasi kamisubin. There is nothing literally lighter. What it means over here, I will say, is inferior. There is nothing more inferior than bran. The kamis subin, what's even more inferior than bran? Chasan hadar bebeis chamof. Even more inferior than bran is a man who lives with his in-laws. Very similarly, again, in close proximity to his mother-in-law. The kamis chasan, I will say, what's worse than a chasan who lives with his in-laws? I will say, this is amazing. Oreach machnis oreach. A guest who brings another guest. As Rabbi say, if somebody invites you for achnasas arachim, to go ahead and then bring someone else with you without the permission of your host, Rabbi say, is considered to be a fundamental lack of midos. The kame oreach, Rabbi say, this is amazing. And what's even more inferior than a guest who brings another guest without the permission of the host? Meishiv davar b'terem yishma, someone who answers things before he even listens. Shene emar. He who answers before he listens, it's a catastrophe for him. It'll be destroyed. We'll say, what does that mean? We'll say, someone who answers before he listens. So we'll say, this is a person who even before you have a chance to say something is already ready to respond. We'll say, you know, sometimes you have conversations like this with people. You could tell, you know, klal gadol, it's actually a very good thing to know. You could tell from a person's body language if when they're getting, right, you ever have a conversation with someone and like they're like, yeah, like they're or like they're getting to the edge of their chair. We'll say, you know, they say that we know it from a neuroscience perspective, that the moment that a person is already ready to respond, they've stopped listening. It's the cloud goggle, by the way, just in conversations. If you see a person is already in that state where they're in the response mode, better to even stop talking because they're no longer listening to what it is that you have to say. They're already responding. We'll say, what's the problem with a person who lives like that? We'll say, if a person always has all the answers and never takes the time to listen, you never learn anything. If a person never learns anything, we'll say they can never grow. One of the most important yisodos in life is to learn to be a listener. It's to learn to be the kind of person who is able to take in information. Don't always be the person who has something to say, something to add, something to contribute, something to respond. Rather, perfect the art of listening. Because otherwise, again, as Chazal said, Ezu chacham alo min nikaladim. You could only learn, Rabosai, if you know how to listen. But he who is already ready to respond before he has even had the opportunity to listen never learns anything. Gemara goes weiter. Rabbi Shmuel Omer Zeref es Bakar, Haroz el Asas. Rabosai, remember again. So here's what we have. Amen. So we'll say the Gemara says the following. So remember again, The way the Mishnah read was like this. The Mishnah said, Rabbi Shmuel Omer, Refes Bakar, he's Rarot Zalassos. So Refes Bakar Man Katanis. People say, why did the Mishnah bring in a stable? Why did he bring in a stable? Ika da Amra Rabbi Shmuel Katanila, Fika da Amra Rabbi Akiva Katanila. Some say it was Rabbi Shmuel who said it, others say it was Rabbi Akiva who said it. Ika, so let's analyze this. Ika da Amra Rabbi Akiva Katanila, Vachi Kamar. So some say it was Rabbi Akiva who said it, and this is how you are to understand it. Afapi, so we'll say Rabbi Akiva says that what? Remember, Rabbi Akiva was the one who said in the Mishnah that if Reuven hires me to build a home for Reuven's son who is getting married, and Reuven doesn't give me dimensions, and I build a house that is 4x6, I have discharged my obligation. Rabbi Shmuel responds, that's not a house, that's a stable. So what does Rabbi Akiva say? Vachi kamar, afa pi sherefes bakar hi. Rabbi Akiva agrees, I know that this is a small house, and it looks more like a stable. But pamim sha'adam osa dira, so kiref es bakar. Sometimes a person makes his domicile as small as a stable. In other words, some people will say, are okay with that. Ve'ikidam Rabbi Shmuel katana. Others say it's Rabbi Shmuel, and Rabbi Shmuel saying, v'achi kamar, sha'arot alas ref es bakar osa arba amos shol sheis. Others say it's Rabbi Shmuel. And Rabbi Shmuel says that somebody who wants to make a stable makes a stable 4x6. Okay, trackling yud al yud. So we'll say the minimum dimensions for a trackling are 10x10. My trackling. We'll say, what are trackling? So kupsa be vardi. So we'll say trackling, essentially, we'll say, as we're going to see, is a kufsa be vardi. If you look at the Rashbam says, kufsa ken kuba shalzonos, venirli sha'asui chalonos ken kuba. We'll say, this was a nice outdoor area. Well, it was enclosed with multiple windows. So this was not really a place that was used as a living space, but rather, again, it was a place that was used as a relaxation space. So really only the wealthy had this. I guess it's what you'd call today like a sunroom. A sunroom, right? It had, I'm sorry? Like a gazebo, but an enclosed gazebo with windows on all sides, and it had rose gardens. So if somebody hired you to go ahead and build a traklin, the minimum dimensions of a traklin were 10 amos by 10 amos, surrounded by roses. Sounds very beautiful. The kantir. They both say, ultimately, again, if somebody hired you to build a kantir, that's shtemes yar shtemes. So both say the minimum dimensions of a kantir are 12 amos by 12 amos. What's a kantir? Tarbats apadni. So a kantir, I will say, is a tarbitz apadni. What does that mean? Look at the Rashbam. Tarbitz apadni. Chatzir gadosh osin sarim b'tzad apadni shalohem. Vish al shem shemar bitzin osa tamid b'mayim lahash kiva avak. We'll say this would be ultimately a large chatzir, a large garden that people would make at the entranceway to their mansions. So the definition, ultimately, again, the minimum dimensions, I should say, of this kantir, of this garden by the entranceway of your mansion, was 12 amos by 12 amos. Rumo kichatzi arko, o kichatzi rachbo, rayu ledavar b'shemen gamil, omer kebiyin achayichos. So we'll say, after we get finished with all the dimensions, what's the minimum height dimension? So we'll say, very important. So height dimension, how do we determine height? Length plus width divided by 2. Where do we get that from, Rabosai? Because those were the dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash. So says the Gemara, rayu ledavar man katani lo. So we'll say, ultimately, again, who is the author of this statement, Raya Ladavar? Meaning, who is the author of this statement that I will say models our personal building after the building of the Beis HaMikdash? Some say it was Rabbi Shimon Gamliel. What did he say? Vachi kamar, Raya Ladavar minayin. Where do you know, I will say, from where do we know? And I will say, if you think about it, by the way, it's such a beautiful idea that when determining the dimensions of our home, we look for the dimensions of the Beis HaMikdash. So Amar Rav Shimon Gamliel, Hakol Kebinyan Heichal. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, anything you build in life, Rabosai, has to always resemble the Beis HaMikdash. An incredible yisod. And even if it's just in determining, again, the height of your structure, we use the Beis HaMikdash is the paradigm for every single building. V'ika da'amar Tanakama katanila. Well, the other say the Tanakama said it. Rav Shimon Gamliel, atmuye kamatame. And Rav Shimon was actually asking a kasha. We'll say in the conversation goes like this. The Tanakhama says that when determining the height of your structure, how do we determine the height? It's length plus width divided by 2. And Rav Shimon Gamliel says, Raya minayin. Rav Shimon says, Tanakhama, where do you get that from? To which the Tanakhama responds, Ah, me binyan ahechel. Tanakhama says, I get that from the Beis HaMikdash. Rav Shimon Gamliel says, Atu kuli amaka binyan ahechel avdi. I don't understand. Tanakhama says, is everyone making their structure like the Beis HaMikdash? In other words, where do you get ultimately, again, that is also modeled after the Beis Hamikdash. Tanya Achirim Omrim. So we'll say others say Rumo that height is kikorosav. We'll say that the height of a structure is the equivalent to the length of its beams, which I will say is another way of saying Valemo Rumo Karachbo. Why don't you just say that the height is the equivalent ultimately of the width? Ibai Sema Besam Me'ilai Ravach. Others say because you can't say, I will say because the height gets wider as it goes up. Others say, Rabbosai, that you have the sockets into which the beams fit. So because of that, Rabbosai, the sockets represent additional width above and beyond the size of, or I should say, the length of the beams. Rabbi Chanina, Nafak L'Kriyasa. So let's just read this last piece. So Rabbosai, so what we have over here is, remember, I just want to point out what's happening over here. What's happening over here is the following. Apologies, it's a bit warm in here, no? Okay, I'm sorry. We're almost finished. Good. So from the start, you get more schar. So let's say, what's happening over here? Remember, what's occurring over here is the following. What's occurring over here is I'm hiring someone to build a home, but without one little detail, which is what? Size, right? So I say, Gil, build me a home. I just don't give him a little product placement here. Right? But I don't give him the dimensions. So I'll say, so what happens if you hire someone and you don't give them dimensions? So what Halacha is trying to do is establish these are the minimum dimensions of a home. 4x6, 8x10, 10x10, 12x12. Height. So I'll say, so now height, we're having a little bit of a machlokes. So the Tanakama, whether it's Tanakama, we're going to know someone saying that the height is modeled after the Beis HaMikdash, which is taken by length plus width divided by 2. Achirim say no, the height ultimately is established by the length of the beams. So we'll say, now that we mentioned the Beis HaMikdash, we're going to spend a little bit of time speaking about this. So let's spend two more minutes. We'll just get to the daf, begin the conversation of the Beis HaMikdash. Although again, we'll say, because we're gonna close out the shir today with a discussion about the Beis HaMikdash, and we're gonna begin tomorrow with a discussion about the Beis HaMikdash. We're gonna be sandwiched, mamish, at least for today, between the Beis HaMikdash. It's an incredible zechus. Let's finish this up. Says the Gemara, Rabbi Chanina nafik l'kriyasa. Rabbi Chanina went out into the villages. Romo le Christ. Well, say, what happened over here, if you can imagine this, it must have been such a beautiful scene. So in the villages, Lav Dafka, they had Rabbanim and Tamidi Chachamim. So when Rabbi Chanina comes, one could imagine that he got bombarded with questions. So one of the questions they bring up is they find a contradiction in the Psukim from Navi. What happened? Romo le Kroy, Adad Iksiv, it says, both said, this is in Malachim Aleph, Perek Vav, by the construction of the Beis HaMikdash. Va'abayis asher bana hamelech Shlomo, the building that Shlomo built, the Beis HaMikdash, so shishim amah arko, was 60 amos in length, ve'asim rachbo, 20 amos in width, u'shloshim amah kamoso, 30 amos in height, which Rabbo say is incredible. 30 amos in height, okay? Uksiv, yet Rabbo say, the next pasuk says, meaning a few psukim later, ulifnei hadavir asrim amo orech ve'asrim amo rachav. Yet Rabbo say, it says, lifnei hadavir. Rabbo say, lifnei hadavir, the devir ultimately is the Kodesh HaKadoshim. When the Kodesh HaKadoshim, there was a height of 20 amos. So Rabbo say, we have a contradiction. The first pasuk says the Beis HaMikdash was 30 amos high. The second pasuk says the Beis HaMikdash was how tall? 20 amos. So they asked Rabbi Chanina, which one is it? Is it 30 amos high or 20 amos high? To which Rabbi Chanina said, Amr Luhu, ki kachoshiv misvas keruvim ulemalo. So we'll say, to which Rabbi Chanina said, it's not a contradiction. And ultimately, again, the first pasuk, when it says the Beis HaMikdash was 30 amos high, that was measuring from the floor to the ceiling. The second pasuk, when it said the Beis HaMikdash, the ceiling height was 20 amos high, that was measuring, Rabbi say, from the top of the Kruvim, right? The Kruvim were like the cherub-like figures perched on top of the Aron. That was from the top of the Kruvim until the ceiling. We're going to see again, the Kruvim had 10 amos in height. Therefore, from the top of the Kruvim to the ceiling was 20 amos high. To which the Gemara says, my kamash malon, who cares about this? Right? What does this matter? We'll say the answer to which we will Amir Hashem see tomorrow. So again, what we'll have to discuss is meaning, why do I need to know two different heights? Once I know that it's 30 amos from floor to ceiling, why do I need to know that it's 20 amos from the top of the Kruvim to the ceiling? You're on a cliffhanger, Amir Hashem tomorrow. Shkoyach.
What?